worry, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry food.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 85 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, go over the news, and then ask the question, should vegan options be clearly labeled on restaurant menus?
We're asking the hard questions this week, Paul.
And speaking of restaurants, Andy, what have you been eating?
Oh, Paul, I was just down in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. It's a town. This is only my second visit. It's a town I really like. Last time, got to discover a lot of really cool vegan restaurants or places that had vegan options. I returned to most of them. The only one I'll mention is Plant, which I had a fantastic like tasting menu last time I was there. This time I just picked out a few of my favorites from last time.
Nice.
It was great. A new thing that I got was this cannolo, which is essentially a cannoli. And it was filled with this like orange zest cream. And it came with some smoked almond ice cream. And it was so good.
I'm caught up on why they changed that I to an O at the end of the word, but
I don't know if that's more authentic. What's going on? They're just trying to be weird, but there's a picture of that up on our Instagram. I think people should go look at it. It's quite beautiful, and I was eating outside, and the sun was setting, and there's some nice shadows. So, fantastic meal at Plant yet again.
Nice.
At the Asheville Vegan Fest, I got to sneak away from my table, and Paul,
tell me about all the exciting options that were available.
Well, this will be no surprise to you, but I got a banh mi.
Oh, very nice.
And it was from Viet Grill, and they also had these really great fresh roll, spring roll type things. They came with a really nice peanut sauce. But this banh mi, let me tell you, they did it right.
Let banh mi tell you.
you know how much I love a banh mi.
Oh, yeah.
And they nailed the bread. They filled it with some kind of marinated, it wasn't quite seitan. It was some kind of almost like Meiwa-esque chicken-y kind of thing. And the pickled veggies. And it was fantastic. So I'm going to have to go seek out their physical location the next time I'm in town.
I feel like I rarely see banh mis on any menu, and you have one like every single week.
Well, Paul, you gotta know how to look for it. I mean, it depends how it's labeled on the menu, I suppose.
Oh, hints of things to come.
Yes. So anyway, so it was towards the end of the day, and the crowd had started to die down a little bit, and so I went for a walk around the fest. I hadn't got a chance to look at all the vendors yet. And most of them were sold out of food, as happens towards the end of events. And I found one vendor that was not sold out of food. They were sold out of one thing. And I was like, yeah, I wonder what they're offering. They must have been really well prepared. And I looked at their menu, and the first thing they're advertising, all like exciting big letters, vegan chili. And then I was like, ugh. And then the next thing on the menu was a hummus wrap. Mm. And then they were sold out of their veggie panini. And I'm just like, you got to step it up. If you're coming to a vegan fest, especially in a town that has vegan restaurants, you don't want to make the first thing that comes to mind when people think of like crappy vegan options at a restaurant.
Andy, just
restaurant not to be named, but I was saying, any vendors out there, step up your game.
Claire's. It was not Claire's.
Claire's traveled all the way from Connecticut to serve mediocre vegetarian food. All right, damn, bringing it hard. So thank you to the Beardos that stopped by. A lot of returning Beardos, couple new ones added to the ranks. Blue stopped by, who's now a returning Beardo, but did bring me a nice piece of ceramic art that they made. So
oh, cool.
Thank you very much, Blue. I gotta put a picture up of that on our Instagram story or something.
Yeah.
Thank you to Gwen, thank you to Jeremy, thank you to Queenie, and thank you to Alyssa. And Alyssa was like, when are you going to make some damn Bearded Vegans t-shirts? And I said, we want to. It's just a matter of us doing it, you know? It's just like we just got to do it. And I said to Alyssa, we don't really know what they would be. Would they just be our logo? Does anybody really want that? Should it be some kind of phrase from the show? Or, like, we don't, like, really have a catchphrase. Like, it used to be, who knows, I don't know. We haven't said that in a while. Alyssa was like, you should just make one that says, what's up, Beardos? I would like that. So I'm bringing this up for all of our wonderful Beardos out there. Do you want t-shirts? I know a few people have said yes. And what do you think should be on those t-shirts? Yeah. Do you just want our logo? You want our faces on your body? Do you want to say something? Like, what's going on? Send us an email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com, with your vote and your opinion. And we look forward to hearing from you.
I think What's Up Beardos could be a pretty cool one.
I feel like people would be very confused when they see that and they don't know the podcast, but that also kind of makes me happy. We might be confusing people all over the planet.
Yes.
So yeah, so that was my time in Asheville, and Paul, now I'm sitting right across from you yet again. I zoomed right back up to Connecticut. I couldn't stand to be not in the presence of one Professor Paul Steller. So Paul,
yes,
I know you had a very busy weekend as well.
Yes, so I was at the Vegan Street Fair New York edition.
First ever,
and it was by far the busiest event that I've ever worked at. I'm used to seeing, you know, long lines for a lot of the big food vendors, but here it seemed like all the food vendors had super long lines. There was lines to sell the t-shirts, which is also new for me. I was basically, I was slinging t-shirts from 11 till I think it closed at 5, like basically nonstop, which was fun. It was fun. It was like exhausting. Luckily, I had a tent because it was incredibly hot. I'm pretty sure someone passed out right next to our tent. I was not there when that happened, but it was wild. It was a lot of fun. And at the event, I was able to try the elusive Peaceful Provisions Cronut, which Andy, I don't know if it's actually elusive, but
well, the Peaceful Provisions doesn't have a storefront, and so they're hard to get, and like they're by far my favorite donut at this point, and Cronut, I guess. And I keep like missing them at events, you know, like I'm doing the vegan market in Brooklyn this coming Sunday, which they're normally at, but they're not, I assume, because they're doing this Woodstock sanctuary thing the day before. And I'm just like, and then they were listed on a vegan pop-up I was doing in New Jersey. But then I realized that like the wrong vendors had been put in, unfortunately.
No.
So then they've been taken away from me twice now. So I'm on the prowl for some Peaceful Provisions.
The Carmen Sandiego of vegan food. But so I tried the everything Cronut, and it was like the croissant donut. It was cream filled, and it had the like what you would imagine on everything bagel, those toppings, which like every time I've described that to someone, they've kind of given me like a gross look. And I'm like, no, trust me. This is one of the best things that I've ever had in my life. And I show them the picture and they're like, wow. But it was awesome. It was so good. And had I known that they were also selling this, I might have gotten this instead. They were selling this like savory breakfast sandwich that had, I think it had like scrambled tofu. It had some meat substitute in there, a couple other things, and it was in between two donuts. And
sounds like a dream come true.
Yes, I probably would have gotten that instead, but I do not regret that Cronut at all, because I was thinking about it. I was like, I don't think I've ever had a vegan croissant before.
Yeah.
And it like flaked just like a croissant. It was.
Yeah. And when you say cream filling, it's like a cream cheese. It's like a sweet cream cheese filling. Like it's not just like a Boston cream kind of filling. It's so good.
No, it was amazing. I didn't have too much time to walk around the event, unfortunately. So I didn't really get to try anything else. I didn't get to wait in the 2-hour line for the rainbow waffle ice cream sandwich that we got last time.
Where's Sherry? Sherry, we needed you.
but I did have, after the event, I hung out with a couple friends, and I got like right around the corner from where the event was a Blossom du Jour location, which, you know, it was great. I didn't get anything super fancy, but at that point, all I had really eaten was a lot of junk food.
Yeah.
So I got like the protein power bowl, it was called, I think.
Nice.
And it was good. It was like very satisfying. It was like beans and avocado and some salad stuff. And it was just like, okay, this is good. Like, this is what my stomach needed. And then
Not
I got
an overwhelming praise, Paul.
And no, it was, well, it is something that
it got the job done.
It got the job done. And then as I say this, I just remembered in my head, I then looked at the refrigerated section and ordered a peanut butter and jelly brownie, which was also delicious. But and like, I don't know if I could say this about all the entire restaurant as a whole, but the person that was attending to me that worked there, just the nicest person in the world. So if you happen to be listening and you for some reason knew that that was me, hey, thanks for being so nice. And at the event, I also met a few other beardos. I have these names scribbled down on this piece of paper in some strange order. So I hope I get everyone's name, and I hope I get everyone's name right. But thank you for stopping by, Gerald, Bobby, Lori, and Diana, who Diana is, I believe she said, originally from New Haven and had some qualms with you ranking on Claire's, Andy. But to each their own, I think. And a super special shout out also to Rudy from Vegicano.
Such a nice gentleman.
Such a nice gentleman. The nicest dressed gentleman too.
Yes, even in that hot weather, huh?
Yeah, yes, like always looks phenomenal. But it was so hot, even though we were covered, like we were covered in shade by the tent. It was just so hot, and we couldn't really get out to get anything to drink. So he brought us some lemonades. And it was a lifesaver. And this kind of leads into the next little bit that Andy and I both went to, but also attending was a couple friends of ours, Heather and Sam. Heather, who is the owner of the Sweet Beat, and they both smartly walked across the street to like a convenience store and bought a bunch of water, and they brought us back a couple
and
bottles of water.
Came in and
too.
Sold them all for $10 each.
Yeah.
Starving. Thirsty masses.
Yeah, yeah. Also a lifesaver because I think I drink a lot more water than most people. Like just during the day, I'm just constantly drinking water. And so to not drink any water during the whole day, my body was like, what's going on right now? So that was a lifesaver. Thank you so much. And we actually, on that note, Andy and I, right before recording this, we just visited the Sweet Beat, and it's only about 30 minutes away from me, but I just haven't had the chance to get there in a while, and I missed it. A lot of new additions, which was awesome. They have like a whole, like they're selling a lot of other vegan items, not just the stuff that they make, but they're now selling the Yeah Dog hot dogs, which is awesome. There's a lot of products, a lot of cheese products like the Tree Line and the Miyoko's.
Dr. Cow. They got the Anita's yogurt, which I see like almost nowhere. And they will soon be carrying Compassion Company t-shirts. Yay. Which is very exciting.
Yeah.
You know, Sweet Beat is a place that, Paul, I feel like you always talk about how much you love it. And for me, it is very far from when I was living in Connecticut, very far from that. And so, yeah, I don't get there very often. And, you know, a lot of the stuff they do is not like super my jam, even though I really like a lot of what they did. But today I found my jam.
And it was jam.
It was a very nice jam. No, it was a like egg salad made out of chickpeas. Mm-hmm. And it just tasted like deviled eggs. And it was so good. So I got some to go. So Heather, mwah, fantastic job.
Yeah, it's definitely like on the healthier end of like vegan restaurants. It's no Blackbird where you leave and you're like, my stomach is going to hurt tomorrow. But
gluten bomb.
but a lot of those types of restaurants, you know, it's like I usually leave them and be like, yeah, I just ate something really healthy and it like was not super satisfying though.
Yeah.
And this is just very satisfying food that you feel good after you eat it too.
Yeah. So props to the Sweet Beat in Connecticut.
Yeah. And also shout out to Michelle, who also works at the Sweet Beat, who was very excited to see us.
And thankfully we had some buttons and stickers available to give to Michelle, unlike the last time I randomly ran into a beardo and had nothing.
Nothing!
No buttons for you. Paul.
Yes, Andy.
You know, it's been quite a while since anyone has sent us a product to review.
I think it's only happened maybe one other time.
With some pickles. Way back in the day.
That was delicious.
Now, we are not above bribery, but some, you know, we're like, hey, you want to send us something to try? We'll try it, and we will give our honest opinion, and it's your fault if it's bad. So so we were contacted by Stacy and Mom. Now, Paul, I don't know if you remember this. I tried Stacy and Mom products at Expo West, I think, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making frozen meals And I thought they were so delicious. Like, they were very good. They didn't taste like they were just, like, heated up in a microwave. They're really good. So they contacted us and they're like, can we send you some snacks? And I was like, I like snacks. You like snacks, Paul?
I like snacks.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't love good snacks? So yeah. I didn't tell Paul these were coming. And then Paul was just like, you mail me some snacks.
Which has happened before.
So anyway, so Stacy and Mom sent us these things. And they were burdock chips and lotus root chips. And I have to say, Paul, at first I was like, ooh.
It's so healthy looking.
I don't know. I was just like, I mean, they're not like colorful. Basically, they look like they're like tempura deep fried kind of mm-hmm. things. And I was like, oh, this is a bummer. Like, I don't think this is going to be good. And I don't want to, like, you know, we try to only talk about the food that we really like on the show.
Except for Claire's.
For the most part, you know, like, we try tons of food and a lot of it's not that great, but it's like we want to promote the stuff that we think is good. Mm-hmm. It's rare that we'll give stuff a negative review. If we don't like something, we usually just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So here we are talking about this. And I tried it and I was like, dang it, these are really good.
I don't know why you were disappointed.
No. I mean, they were just like, I already finished one bag in the time that you were sitting here preparing this episode. Yeah. And yeah, they're just like crunchy and
very crunchy.
They taste like, yeah, like deep fried. They taste like a tempura vegetable and they have a little garlic powder in them.
Oh, I liked the garlicky flavor.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I would like to give them a plug, Stacy and Mom, because when I met them at Expo West, they were super nice and like a small up and coming company. So check them out.
Yeah, it was very good. If I may say, Andy, Stacy and Mom has got it going on. And there's the attributes.
You may not say that. So anyway, yeah, if anyone else wants to send us stuff, we'll eat it. And if we don't talk about it on air, that means we hate it.
Oh. But thank you for sending it to us anyways.
Yes.
So Andy, at the Asheville Veg Fest, you got to see some speakers.
Yeah, I actually really love the format of the Asheville Vegan Fest, at least from a vendor standpoint, because they have two main days. They have like a Friday that's like a welcome party kind of thing I've never been to. But so the first day is in a Masonic temple and it's like their speaker day and there's several panels throughout the day. And often I'll see panels at like conferences and everyone gets like 10 minutes to speak and there's like 10 minutes for Q&A and everyone goes over their time and nothing works out. And this, they give every panel like 2.5 hours for three or four speakers.
Yeah.
So they give everyone like a healthy amount of time to give their talk and then to allow for Q&A, which I like. So I went and they had a variety of speakers representing a variety of viewpoints, some that will be familiar to listeners of the show as folks that Paul and I don't necessarily agree with most of the time. But it was fun for me because normally when I'm doing events, I don't get to walk around. You know, if I do, it's to grab a bite of food quickly, use the bathroom. It's never to go sit and watch someone speak for an hour to 2.5 hours. So I really enjoy this format, and it works out nicely for me. So the first panel I went to was Eunice Wong from What the Health, who wrote the What the Health book, companion book.
Oh, okay.
Chris Hedges, who is like a Pulitzer Prize winning author, and Gary Francione.
Cheesy Francione.
Cheese Francione in the flesh. And, you know, I was like, Gary's doing his Gary thing, just kind of shitting all over the major organizations. And that's what he does. And, you know, he's grumpy old Gary, I guess. But it was interesting. He actually opened his talk with something that was like, for him, very pro-intersectional, for lack of a better term, in which he talked about the necessity to be anti-racist and anti-sexist and all these things.
That's good.
For the sake of creating an inclusive movement. And I was like, who is this?
You trying to get me to like you, Gary?
I mean, he has talked and talks a lot about how racism and sexism like are not compatible with veganism because of anti-speciesism. If you believe in anti-speciesism, then you can't possibly believe in anything that's sexist. But it also, from my viewpoint, he says those things but then doesn't necessarily engage with the nuances of those things. You know, and we see that all the time with people who are kind of like well-meaning liberal types that are like, obviously racism's bad, but then they're not really looking into, you know, anything below KKK and cross burnings and all those things, like, you know, the things that are very clearly, obviously racist. So I was like, oh, interesting. Interesting. Interesting what you do, Gary. And then he just went into like his usual thing. And he said something that was interesting. I mean, first he said there's not one single group that promotes veganism as a moral imperative. And I don't know if he's talking about mainstream groups, but I feel like there's a lot of people that promote veganism as a moral imperative. So I don't know if he's only talking about big mainstream nonprofit, you know, organizations. But it just seemed like it was like kind of a weird glossing over of the work that a lot of really good grassroots organizations are doing. So that struck me as a little bit weird. But the thing that I wanted to ask you about, Paul, someone mentioned health during the Q&A. And someone talked about how they were disappointed that health wasn't more of a focal point of the panel that was going on, I guess, or of veganism in general. Don't know where this person's been. Obviously, it's out there a lot, the health aspects of it. But Francione said, it's only about health so far as we have a moral obligation to not harm ourselves. I'm curious what you think of that statement, Paul.
Did he expand on that at all? Because that seemed like... What is his definition of like harming yourself? Does that mean eating oil, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the vibe I got from it was it's important to be healthy so that we can do our best for the animals, but he didn't really expand on it super far.
Like, I don't know. I want people to care about themselves. I don't think it's like a moral obligation of anyone to have to do that, you know, but it's like, I would hope that people do that. I think, there's that, like I was just kind of bringing up, I don't know whether he's talking about like, oh, you have to eat quote, like super healthy in the way that a lot of these other like health advocates do it, because he doesn't seem like the type of person that would be promoting that sort of thing. He doesn't seem like the type of person that would be promoting, like in his activism, promoting like, oh, and it's going to cure cancer and it's going to do this and it's going to do that.
Yeah. He definitely does not.
But that's what, like, to me, that's what that kind of seems like a little bit. Like, maybe he's just talking about like what you said, where it's like, hey, don't just sit around and eat potato chips all day and then you don't have the energy to do anything. You don't have the energy to go out and promote veganism or something like that. But I don't know. It's kind of a weird statement.
Yeah, it was really kind of out of left field from him. I'd be curious to know more about that. But I also feel like that's kind of the justification used to shame people for their bodies and their health conditions and things a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because you hear people say like, well, veganism's about compassion for animals and humans are animals. And it's like, we have to be compassionate for ourselves. And if you don't put your body in the peak physical condition, then you're not being compassionate towards yourself and you're not really following through with veganism.
Yeah.
So to me, it felt like that was kind of an extension of that, which I disagree with.
Yeah. Yeah. It almost seems like that has nothing to that line. It's only about health as so far as we have a moral obligation to not harm ourselves. It almost seems like that's like a different viewpoint that he has. Like, to me, that doesn't seem... It could be that it's not necessarily connected to veganism. That's just like a different viewpoint that he has. That's more along the lines of like what you were just saying.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's entirely possible. I mean, I guess I don't know what to think about saying we have a moral obligation to not harm ourselves, because then that obviously brings in like suicide.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what is the moral obligation there? Like, is the moral obligation not hurt yourself because you will cause sadness to your friends and family if that happens? I don't know. It's a deep philosophical question, yeah. Paul.
But I don't think I'm equipped to be answering. It definitely does, like you were kind of saying, it does come off as a little, as promoting like some sort of shaming for how someone chooses to live, to live their life. I don't know. And there's no like, when it comes to food and stuff like that, when you're talking about like harming yourself with food, I feel like that doesn't mean like one thing. That could mean to many different people different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I feel like it's hard to say like you have a moral obligation to something that's not even like a defined thing, because some people in like the documentaries that we're watching are saying harming yourself is eating oil and is eating like fatty food and junk food and stuff like that. Like a lot of those people would say that that's harming yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, he doesn't seem like the type of person that would say you have a moral obligation not to not do those things.
Yeah.
And even the people that are in those documentaries, I don't even think most of them would say you have a moral obligation not to do this. Most of them would probably just say, hey, you shouldn't do this, which I still wouldn't agree with them saying what we should or should not do.
Yeah.
But even that's like a step below a moral obligation to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Something to rattle around in the old brain.
Yeah.
Think about. Send us your emails at thebeardvegans@gmail.com. So moving on, there was a moderator by the name of Paul. And
great name.
And during the Q&A section, sometimes the moderators would pose their questions. And at one point he asked, why aren't more mothers involved? Why aren't more women involved? Why isn't this a women's issue? And I took it to understand that it was kind of that question that's like when people try and force veganism into a feminist issue, and people say, well, they're exploiting the reproductive systems of mother cows, and like, if you aren't vegan, then you're not a feminist. Like, it felt like it was that kind of thing, which is obviously always really weird coming mm-hmm. from a man.
Yeah.
But I wanted to bring it up because it just felt so weird to ask that question, because 80% of vegans are women. Yeah. And I'd imagine a decent amount of them are mothers or could be mothers mm-hmm. or, you know, I know, you know, there's obviously a lot of vegans that don't want to have children, but it felt like a weird, really kind of unaware statement to say. And I think especially paired with the fact that looking at the breakdown of the speakers, there was 11 speakers on that first day and only 3 of them were women. So it didn't reflect the breakdown of the vegan movement. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you can almost answer the only question is like, maybe there aren't more women involved because you keep shutting them out of the movement. You're not inviting them to speak. So I don't know. The whole thing like struck me as weird, especially because in the next panel they had Ashley Capps, who is from A Well-Fed World and also one of the founders of Mothers Against Dairy. Now, I learned an interesting fact that Ashley is not, in fact, a mother. So, kind of weird, I guess. Huh. But at the same time, it's like, here's a woman advocating for, like, mothers within veganism to be against dairy. So, it's like, are women not involved?
Yeah.
Like, you have one on your panel that seems to be really counter to that question. So, you know, I didn't take the statement as, like, a vindictive, like why aren't more women involved kind of thing. But it just was like, really? Like, why aren't more men involved in veganism? Yeah. Like, that's really the question.
Yeah.
You know, when only 20% of vegans are men, like.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
It seems like maybe it was just, I don't know, he, like, thought of a question on the spot, and that was
it. Yeah. I don't know. It was just, like, it was just super weird. Super weird.
And because he wasn't asking this to Ashley Capps?
No. Like, he was the moderator on the first panel I saw. There was a different moderator on the second panel.
Because that just kind of seems like, especially to the people that were on that panel, like, what does that have to do with them?
It was just like a general Q&A. I believe the question was asked to Eunice from With the Health. But anyway, I just wanted to muse on that. I feel like I needed to, like, say it into the world because it was such a head scratcher when it was said.
Yeah.
So anyway, moving on to the second panel. Second panel was the aforementioned Ashley Capps and friend of the show, Casey Taft, who we interviewed some episodes back, who has a new book out called Millennial Vegan, and Wayne Shung from Direct Action Everywhere, and someone I had not had a chance to see speak before, Eugene Cook from Grow Where You Are. And I enjoyed Casey Taft doing his thing. He mentioned that he said there's, quote, there's a body of literature that says the more difficult and specific an ask, the more progress will happen, which to me made me think about our episode about, you know, the One Step for Animals organization that was saying just stop eating chicken, and how that seems like, to you, Paul, it seemed like it was a big ask to ask someone to stop eating chicken. And to me, I was like, that seems like that'd be way easier than saying go vegan, go vegetarian, or even like eat vegan for breakfast every day or something like that. So,
but he's saying go big or go home.
Mm-hmm. And I guess perhaps it's like, hey, the bigger your ask, you know, if you have a very small ask and they don't fulfill it and they fall short on that, then obviously not a lot of progress is made. But you make a giant ask, even if they only reach 25% of that.
It's bigger than the small.
It's still bigger than the small step.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Huh. Is that what he said? Is that what the body of literature kind of said?
Essentially, yeah. It was essentially saying that you should shoot for the moon, you might land in the stars, mm-hmm. kind of thing, whatever.
And I'm assuming you combed through this body of literature, Andy.
I did not. But he does talk about it in his book, if I remember. Yeah. So anyway, so just a little plug for Casey Taft right there. And then actually the star of the whole
meal,
the star of all the panels I saw was actually Eugene Cook, who came up from Atlanta and started their presentation saying, hey, who has a smartphone? Cool. You got Instagram. Grow where you are. Look it up. You'll see pictures of what we do. You'll get a good idea. And then just proceeded to address points that had been brought up in the previous panel.
Oh, cool.
And other issues that was sort of on Eugene's mind. And I thought it was great. I thought it was, he's someone that I would love to have on the show at some point. But he kind of addressed a little bit, I assume he was kind of talking about what Gary Francione was saying about, you know, when he was talking about it's important to be inclusive of other people so we can make the most vegans. And the way he was saying it was kind of like, how, you know, we need to bring in people of color by not mm-hmm. being racist and stuff. And Eugene was saying, people of color are here. We've been in veganism and for a long time. And like, you all are not saying something that people of color haven't been saying for a long time. Talked about the history of veganism and hip hop and like KRS-One and Dead Prez and artists of that nature. And so I thought that was like a really, really poignant thing to keep in mind with how we talk about. I feel like we've probably fallen into that trap ourselves at times, perhaps, you know, that it's, maybe when we're talking about like being inclusive, we're like talking almost exclusively about like this specific mainstream animal rights movement that we often deal with, which is overwhelmingly white most of the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to not discount the fact that there are plenty of people of color that are doing the work outside of that movement, perhaps because it's so unwelcoming.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah. I thought just, fantastic. I would love to see Eugene at more events of this nature. So
did any of the other panelists like respond to that at all or speak on that too?
Not really, at least not in like a particularly effective way. But I will say that my least favorite part about Q&A sections of panels like this is when people take question and answer to mean step up to the microphone and tell your life story about why you went vegan and don't ask a question. That happened several times. And there was one person in the previous panel who went up to ask a question, essentially saying that property ownership was essential to democracy. And he came up and he's like, I have two questions. My first is for Gary Francione. And then he went on a several minute tangent and then asked his question. And then it was like, and my next question is for Chris Hedges. And then like went on another several minute tangent. God. And the moderator at one point like kind of cut him off. I was like, could you get to the question? And the guy was like, could you give me a second? And I was just like, oh my God. And so Eugene talked about that, about this white guy that came up and was just like monopolizing time and not really asking questions and, you know, making this assertion that property ownership is essential for democracy. And it was just cool to hear him, you know, addressing these things that had happened before and things that some people, that one was one that really stood out to me, but there was like other little like microaggressions and stuff that were addressed that kind of, you know, just went by me because mm-hmm. it seemed like this is what happens at Veg Fest. So,
that's cool.
So anyway, I'm really glad that Actual Vegan Fest brought him out and,
hopefully we'll see him more.
It's an event that I enjoy. So, yeah, so that's nice. That's my annual Asheville Vegan Fest recap. It usually provides a little podcast fodder, so thank you for having me yet again.
Cool.
I think it's time that we move on into the news, Paul.
Let's do it.
Talk
about some good news. Yeah, I think the news is pretty positive today.
Yeah.
First one, coming to us from SoapboxMedia.com, is called New Montessori School Will Invest in More Than Just Education. And it reads, Carolyn Caldwell imagined a school for her daughter where the focus was kindness rather than performance. I just felt like I wanted something very specific for her, she says. Caldwell, along with Anna Ferguson, Brett Hornberger, Nayana Shah, and Mark Stroud, founded Heart Montessori, a school that will prioritize empathy and compassion intertwined with core academics. Heart will educate children in a typical Montessori style with an emphasis on developing higher self-esteem and higher self-acceptance through yoga, meditation, mindfulness, art, and music. Caldwell says it's important for children to learn tools to be kinder human beings. So it's not open yet. They are bringing in preschool and kindergarten age students for January 2018. And the reason, Andy, that I bring this up, because you might be wondering, like, what does this have to do with anything, is because this school will have an all-vegan, or I should say all plant-based lunch menu or food menu. So that's pretty cool. If you are not familiar with Montessori schools, they follow a specific teaching philosophy that kind of emphasizes more like freedom for students and discovery and like mixing ages of different students. So it's a unique type of school. I believe there are pros and cons to it. I'm not going to go into what I think about Montessori schools, but I think, it's cool though that there is a, you know, I don't know if I want to call it a vegan school, but there's a school that's offering solely vegan food.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice too, because they've kind of made that connection where it's like, oh, this school is about compassion. So like the natural next step of that would be it's about compassion. So we are going to have a vegan menu. And cause I think, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of other Montessori schools promote this same sort of compassion kindness idea and don't have that. So it's nice that they're making that connection. And I think it's going to be, hopefully, I think it's going to be good for the students as well, because they'll be like, oh, I'm learning. Andy's making faces at me. They'll be like, oh, I'm learning about compassion. And like, that's the reason why I'm eating this way. Like I would imagine that, not to make assumptions, but I would imagine that it will be brought up to them why they're not having like hamburgers and stuff on their plates, which I think is important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been said that we don't have to teach children compassion. Like they have it. We just sort of beat it out of them, essentially. Yeah. They're indoctrinated out of it. So I think that something like that gives me hope for the future. I think that, you know, being taught that type of way of thinking and exposing to veganism or at least mm-hmm. plant-based foods early on, I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, I think I have no evidence to back this, but I think that many of those students, if like these are the years where they're learning kindness and compassion and empathy, if that's paired with the vegan diet, I think that'll stick with many of them.
Yeah, certainly better than a non-vegan diet.
Yeah.
Paired
yeah.
with those things, because then that's just kind of teaching people like, you can be kind and compassionate without, you know, doing that. And obviously there are many kind and compassionate people that are not necessarily vegan, mm-hmm. but I think that it's important to like pair those things together from an early age. So
yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah. Paul, do you think this is like indoctrinating children? Is this forcing someone's way of life on them?
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, this is a private school that as a parent, you have to send your kid to. So it's like, even if I imagine there are probably plenty of parents that aren't vegan that are going to send their kids to the school because of the other things that it offers. But it's like, I think they know what they're getting into. So it's not, yeah. And I mean, really it's one or two, like a lunch and a snack time or something like that. It's not forcing them to do this all the time. It's like, maybe I think a lot of them or many of them will hopefully be like, want to bring that, the kids will want to bring that home too and just eat vegan at home. But I wouldn't say it's forcing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither would I. I mean, it's also kind of like, okay, if it is, what a great thing to force on a child.
Yeah. I'm forcing you to be kind to someone. So let's
just shake them until kind.
So let's look at our next positive news story. Yeah,
this is a really cool story. It comes to us from the BBC.com. Vegetarian beef farmer gives herd to animal sanctuary.
Before you read on, Andy, is this guy raising tofu cattle? Is that what's going on here? A vegetarian beef farmer?
So, from the article, Jay Wild, 59, who farms in Ashbourne, Derbyshire, sent 63 cattle to a Norfolk rescue center as he could no longer bear to send them to be killed. And he said, I'm relieved to have made the decision to no longer farm animals, something which I always found quite upsetting. He said his brother-in-law told him he was absolutely ridiculous to give away cattle, which could fetch up to 40,000 pounds at market. And that is monetary currency, not weight of the cows. He said a lack of imagination had previously stopped him from switching to arable land. Mr. Wild will now be running a vegan organic market farm supplying garden produce without using animal products or fertilizers.
That's pretty cool.
What a great positive story. Now, it's not like this is someone who was like eating meat and like all super entrenched and everything. I guess obviously their livelihood depended on it for some period of time. Jay Wild took over the farm from his father in 2011. So he's been operating it for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So been doing it for a while at least. But it still does show that like people can have a change of heart in this regard. It's a documentary that I've mentioned is one I really like. I know you haven't seen it, Paul, but Peaceable Kingdom mm-hmm. is all about, for the most part, farmers who changed their mind and switched to being a sanctuary or gave up their animals or whatever it might be. I think those stories are some of like the most heartening because obviously these are the people that are the most entrenched in it. Their livelihood, you know, is literally intertwined with the oppression and exploitation of animals. So, Paul,
yes, Ed?
Speaking of brightening things,
oh,
it's a good tell me about this vegan Batman light.
From latestvegannews.com, Vegan Batman Light, changing hearts and minds across the U.S. The words Vegan Batman Light may sound like something out of sci-fi, but it's 100% real and 100% radical. There's an emoji of someone surfing. Basically, the light is a giant projector that displays powerful vegan messages on building surfaces, a la the Bat Signal. The idea was dreamed up by activist Connie Spence last year, and she's been shining the light of truth in cities across the country ever since. And she put up a GoFundMe page because she's trying to start new chapters of it. And on the GoFundMe page, you can kind of see some pictures of the different like messages that she's projected and on the buildings that she's projected, because it's not just on, you know, like some random street corner. I mean, she's projected them on the Staples Center, where there was like a 20,000 people capacity at a Lakers game. She's projected them in Hollywood, like on the sides of highways, in Las Vegas at the famous Heart Attack Grill. So it's some pretty like big areas on a slaughterhouse. So and just to give you an idea of what some of the messages say, one of them is, this was outside a slaughterhouse. It says, do slaughterhouses exist in heaven? Go vegan. And then on the bottom of all of them, it says, you're on Facebook Live. I don't exactly get that part. I think it's maybe because if anyone wants to have some sort of confrontation, they know they're being filmed.
If they want to mess with the Bat Signal.
Yeah. Another one says, fact or fiction, one slaughterhouse kills 7,000 animals every night in Los Angeles. Go vegan. All of them end in go vegan.
Not all of them.
Really?
UCLA shame. Animals are being abused at UCLA for experiments that don't yield cures, only profits and ego.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why that one doesn't have... Maybe they ran out of space on that light.
It is quite wordy.
But,
yeah, and this one's like next to a highway. They're getting people driving by. And you ever pass those billboards where you're like, what does it say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this one. People are against animal abuse, but only in the hours between breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Go vegan. Packing a punch. So just to keep reading from the article, this is a quote from Connie Spence. It says, this recipe of activism works, she says, in part because she talks to people, not at them. I learn their name, shake their hand, ask them how they feel, ask them if they've been to a slaughterhouse, ask them why they haven't contemplated animals being abused before this moment. I learn about them and their defenses, and I pivot to any excuse or justification they have. I spend a lot of time remembering stats and practice rebuttals to make sure that I know how to handle every objection. And on top of that, I try to stay calm, but direct, and always try to maintain peace. So it's not super lengthy, but it goes on and interviews her a little bit more about her like kind of advocacy philosophy. And a lot of it, I think, kind of coincides with ours, the whole nonviolent communication type thing. I'm not going to speak for you, Andy, but the whole nonviolent communication thing. And then I just wanted to read this last little bit at the end.
But do you speak for the animals? Do you?
Also, she says, use simple language. Your audience is always speciesist, and you will rarely win someone over when you use language like rape, Holocaust, slavery, or enslavement. I do not need to have my audience turn away from my message because they think I'm downgrading an experience they went through or feel strongly about. This isn't an ego war on words, and so you will never catch me using that language. Ever.
I feel like this is someone we should interview, Paul.
Yes. No, I think so, too. I think this seems like a pretty cool form of advocacy. I think it's cool that not only is she projecting these images, but she's there to talk to the people,
yeah.
Which I think is super important because, like, yeah, buying a billboard on a highway would be great, but, you know, it's like that's not going to change as many minds or hearts as if someone sees that, thinks like, huh, and then you're right there to be like, oh, have you ever thought about this kind of thing before? And you're there to pursue their language because someone might contemplate it, but then, you know, they see the next billboard for some jewelry store or something, and then it's out of their head already.
Yeah, people are so used to billboards, so this is something that kind of is like, oh, this isn't a billboard, even though it's kind of in the landscape of all this advertising, but it's like, it's a new thing that kind of maybe, I don't know if jarring is the right word, but it kind of gets people to be like, oh, that's different than something mm-hmm. I've seen before.
And it's not like she's not projecting like gory or graphic images either, which I think is good too. It almost seems like, and I mean, she's one person. It's maybe she's doing that. She's other people are like a group of people are there as well. Obviously she's not going to get to talk to every single person, but it's like, I think maybe that it's a better kind of conversation starter than if she was just on the street handing out pamphlets to people or something, or like leafleting out to people, because she's able to make, even if she's hitting less people, she's able to have like a deeper conversation. And it all starts off with her kind of posing this idea that's being projected. It's almost like I don't know if this is like a teacher thing, but it's like the warm up of the lesson. And it's like you kind of get it gets the person to think about this thing, and then you really get into it. And I think that could be a really effective tactic.
Yeah. And there's actually a picture on the GoFundMe where the image is projected, and then there's about 10 people gathered below it that all appear to be, they're like in the group, they're happy about the thing that's being projected. So I'd assume that's an instance where this is being projected, and then they have a team of people that are there to talk to people and perhaps provide them with information to take home or something. So
I read that she said she doesn't actually like immediately give out flyers or leaflets or anything like that. She only, after talking to someone and determining that they would like to take a next step, she gives them either like an easy vegan kind of cheat card or like something with more information. But this is maybe one way that her philosophy differs from ours. I don't know, but she was kind of, it seemed like she was against just like mass flyering or leafleting or pamphleting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I know that when I was doing 10 Million Lives tour, we had our basic little trifold brochure that we gave to everyone that washed, and their dollar was inside mm-hmm. of it and had some information, and then we had Guide to Cruelty-Free Eating pamphlets that were, you know, extensive. They're like 20 pages or whatever, and they mm-hmm. have recipes and information on various vegan replacements for you know, meat and dairy and all those things. And those were reserved for like the good deep conversations, and it really made people feel special when you had like that connecting conversation, and you're like, hold on, I have something that I think you would really benefit from, or I think that you'd really like. Mm-hmm. And you go back into the truck and you grab the thing and bring it out for them. And it like makes it feel special. It doesn't feel like you're just been handed something that everyone gets. It's like, we're giving you the secret key to going vegan or whatever it might be. And so I think that is, in many ways, can be a smart strategy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that it necessarily means people shouldn't leaflet at all, although I certainly have my doubts about the efficacy of leafleting, but I think that it just talks about ways that we can make those types of things more effective.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I see. Like this, I almost see it as the whole like projecting thing is just a way to make the conversations that you're having with these people more effective.
Yeah,
rather than just accosting a random person on the street and saying like, "Have you ever thought about? Do you have a moment to talk about veganism?"
Our Lord and Savior, Vegas Christ.
Regis Philbin.
Yeah. You know, Paul, I feel like we are often talking about types of advocacy that we are not super down with. And it's really fun to talk about something that we're both pretty excited about, I think.
Yeah.
This isn't like groundbreaking or anything, but it's like, oh, wow. Why aren't more people doing this? This is such an interesting, eye-catching way of getting people's attention. So,
and besides, you know, the initial costs of the projector and stuff like that, it doesn't seem like a, you know, a super costly or any more time consuming than whatever you would be doing having those conversations with people anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's very nice.
Yes.
Very nice indeed. So we'll of course put a link to that GoFundMe up in the old show notes if you want to find it, or you can just search vegan Batman light, convert the USA. So before we get into our main topic, Paul, I have a question just related to the format of the show. This week we want to know about shirts. I also am thinking about, we had an episode two episodes ago that was very long. It was almost 2.5 hours long. And in the past, we've had episodes like that where we split them up because we're like, ah, that's just too long to listen. This one, we like left it as is. Mm-hmm. So for those of you that have made it at this point, probably close to an hour in the podcast, I'm curious what people out there think. Is your opinion that you'd rather have this much longer episode that you can choose to break up however you want? You can pause, you can come back to it. Or do you prefer shorter hour and a half, hour and 20 minute episodes, even if it's one conversation broken up?
Or should we do like release news episodes and then release main discussion episodes?
Yeah. So let us know. Your opinion can change the face of this podcast. And I guess it's been a while since we've asked like a podcast format question, but it used to be asking about like, should we have food discussion? And really a small handful of people influenced us to keep them. So email in. Your voice is very important. Let us know what you think about the show. Do you like long episodes? Do you like shorter episodes? Tell us what you want. So with that said, let's move in to this article. Paul, you found an article from the vegan strategist, Tobias, someone that don't always agree with, but often poses some really interesting thought experiments. And this is one such one. So tell us about it.
So this is a very recent kind of post that he made. It actually came out at the time of the recording yesterday. And the kind of title that we've come up with it is, should vegan options be clearly labeled? And his title for it was 4 degrees of separation, how to sell a vegan restaurant dish.
I'm going to ask you at the end of this discussion, who is this article for? So keep that in mind.
Okay.
But like, I'm thinking about that title. It's like, is this for people that are starting restaurants? Is this telling vegans that they should go out and advocate for XYZ? So think about that during our discussion, Paul.
I won't, Andy. No, just kidding. I won't. So it's not the longest article in the world, but we're just going to, you know, take some of the main ideas, read a few quotes, paraphrase a little bit. So it says, imagine a certain vegan dish in a restaurant. Let's say it's a dish called Moroccan couscous. Which of the following situations do you prefer? And then there's a little diagram with 5 different options. So the first option would you prefer to have that dish in just a pure vegan restaurant? That's one. Number two is, would you prefer to see the dish on a separate vegan menu in a like omnivore or mixed restaurant? The third option is to see that dish clearly separated on the main menu. The fourth option is see that dish integrated among the other menu items, but with a clear label. And then the last one is integrated among the other menu items and not labeled.
Interesting options.
It is, yeah. And this is like, I saw this. I was like, huh. I've never thought about the dish. I've seen all these different things, but I've never thought like one of them is one. Some of them might have different effects or different pros and cons than others.
I think about it all the time.
Do you?
I guess maybe not so much in the effect that it has on anyone other than myself, but yeah. It definitely gives me feelings of all sorts of. It gets me feeling all sorts of feelings on things when I look at menus, depending on how things are labeled, if they're labeled, if they have like a menu key and then, or like if they have symbols, but then no menu key to correspond to the symbols, things like that.
Yeah.
I eat at restaurants a lot. I spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff.
So Tobias continues, When I ask what you prefer, the answer you give will of course depend on the criteria you use to assess these situations. Are you thinking about your own convenience? In that case, you might prefer option one, in vegan restaurants. There's no hassle, there's no queries, no risks, no uncertainties. If you can't have a vegan restaurant, you may prefer your vegan dishes to be clearly and neatly separated from the other ones. A physically separate vegan menu may give you the feeling that you're really being looked after here. But of course, our own convenience isn't the most important aspect here. Well, at least it isn't for me. Much more important is how many people will order this vegan dish.
So that's like interesting criteria to judge this question, but I think it seems totally reasonable. Like if our goal is to get the most people to eat the most vegan the most amount of times, we should, right? Don't you think we should be looking at what placement or like symbols or whatever is going to get the most people to order the vegan dish, whether they're vegan or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
So understandable. Totally understandable.
So then he kind of goes through the different options and just kind of gives his thoughts on them. So option one, obviously he had already said it's very convenient for us as vegans, but unless a non-vegan is maybe being like dragged into it, into that restaurant, there are many non-vegans who would have no reason and they would not want to ever go into a purely vegan restaurant.
But do you think that that type of person that's so closed off to go into a vegan restaurant would accidentally order a vegan dish if it didn't have like meat in it?
I don't know.
Like how many people that are disgusted at the thought of a vegan restaurant are like super jazzed
couscous
on Moroccan couscous?
No, I don't know. I don't know. But that is a good point. That is a good point.
Like, I don't know. I don't know. Let's move on.
Well, I think at the very least, like they are in the presence of that dish now. Whereas before, if they don't even go into the vegan restaurant, they wouldn't even come into contact with it. Now they're at least coming into contact with it. They're seeing it.
They're seeing that it exists.
Yeah.
That it's at the restaurant they like to go to, has vegan dishes, whether they know it's vegan or not.
Yeah.
And that, like, normalizes vegan food.
Yeah, like, they're going to this restaurant that they know makes good food, you know? It's not this weirdo vegan restaurant that's selling kale bars and fig smoothies.
Kill you.
Kill you, I'm vegan. So yeah, he goes on option two, which was that there's a separate vegan menu. He says Tobias says it feels nice, but it's not productive. And he gives an example of Steve Wynn, who I'm assuming is a chef.
Steve Wynn is a guy that owns like a bunch of hotels in Las Vegas, and he's vegan. And so he made it so all of his restaurants in Vegas have vegan options. And this comes into play with this conversation. With this whole separate vegan menu, this option is one where you have to walk in, know there's a different vegan menu, ask, hey, can I have the vegan menu? And you're given a menu that's like totally separate with no non-vegan options on it. And you sit down, you order from that. Mm-hmm. I remember being in Vegas and like walking by a Wynn restaurant. And I was like, oh, I wonder what the vegan options are. And I looked on their menu and I was like, oh, I guess they don't have them here. Or,
yeah.
You know, and so like... So I just kept moving. I didn't realize that you had to like ask what the extra special secret vegan options were, which to me seems like to jump ahead. I feel like this is the worst of all the options.
Yeah, because it's not getting it like you, the experienced vegan Andy, is not like not even aware of it. And a person that is non-vegan is most certainly probably not going to be aware of it and would not ask for it. Like, why would they get that one?
Yeah, and my partner, she went to one of the events that Veganizer, which is a person in New York City that like veganizes restaurants for like a night or whatever, and went to one of those things, and it was one where they still had their regular menu, but they also had the vegan menu, and this couple sat down next to her, and the waiter, the server was like, oh, here's our menu and here's our vegan menu. And then the server walked away and the people were like, vegan menu, and like pushed it aside, you know? So it like really separates things.
You know, this is kind of like that baseball event. The one...
Oh, with the Pirates?
The vegan baseball event, because it was kind of like like, you pay this extra money, you sit in your own, like, they're physically separating you from everyone else. You pay this money, you sit in your own place, and you get the vegan menu.
You get what you deserve, vegans.
So, and I think we had kind of, or I remember I had kind of said, oh, this is still cool, but I'm disappointed that it's not just like, oh, and today, like, this is what's going to be sold. Or yeah. It's like, it's just kind of like, if you want this, if you're in the know, you can get this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's option number two. Option number three is having on the regular menu a separate vegan section.
A la the Shoreline Diner in Guilford, Connecticut.
Or Chinapan.
They have, the Shoreline Diner in Connecticut has these billboards that are like, vegan options. And you're like, oh my God, vegan options. And you get there and it's just like six things in this separate little box on the menu. And you're like, oh, okay.
Well, Chinapan knows how to do it.
Several
right.
pages yeah. of a different color too. Blue pages.
Blue pages. So this is what Tobias says. That there's a... Did you paraphrase this?
Nope.
Okay. This is what Tobias says. Behavioral science researcher Linda Bacon, I know, that was a Tobias joke, investigated if plant-based dishes were ordered more or less frequently when they were listed separately on a menu. The result was that in the case of a separate vegetarian section, the likelihood that these dishes were ordered dropped by a staggering 56%.
Damn.
Yikes. Ooh. Ooh. So, while again, very convenient for vegans, and in this case, vegetarians, maybe not the most effective way of getting non-vegans to order these things.
I think that probably a lot of non-vegans will treat that section the way I treat a raw section on a vegan menu. Where I'm like, raw entrees, nope. And just like skip past. Like, yeah. Don't even read those things because I can make a salad at home.
And
nothing, no laugh.
Oh, nothing. Sorry. I was thinking. You can edit that. And something that Tobias also kind of points out, and it's kind of similar to what you were saying with like the raw section, is it almost kind of makes it seem like, oh, this is the section for vegans. And I think he even says that he's seen menu items that where the section title is literally for vegans or for our vegan friends. So it's literally saying like, oh, the vegans are the only people that should be ordering from this section.
Yeah.
Which is not good. That's definitely not good.
Not good at all.
The next option was incorporating the dish in the menu while clearly labeling it. And what Tobias was kind of saying was that this really depends on how they label the vegan dish. Like, are they saying, is there a big, it doesn't say like vegan or plant-based or vegetarian or meat-free, or he even gave the example of one restaurant that used the word botanical, which I think is kind of funny. God. And he was saying how also like the label can be small or big or bold, or it could be like you were saying, an asterisk,
a gold star.
Yeah. And then you have to like look for the key to the menu to figure out what that symbol or the asterisk means.
Then you get to feel like Nicolas Cage in National Treasure. Yeah. You're solving problems. Nice.
Soon you're investigating the entire restaurant.
Soon you're stealing the Constitution of the United States.
It was underneath the restaurant the whole time.
Not the bees in my eyes.
Killing me won't bring back your goddamn honey.
Well, Paul, so in this section, Tobias gets at kind of the heart of the matter and something that I think is really interesting and we should dive into. He says, I think we should not worry about the inconvenience for vegans here. A vegan is used to scanning menus and looking out for these things. What matters, again, is how many people order the dish. So I get what he's saying here, but at the same time, isn't it important for it to be easy to be vegan? Like being like, it's hard to be vegan, so vegans are used to that. It's like, well, won't more people go vegan if it's easier? And he actually has an article called Would You Have Gone Vegan If? And it's basically saying it's important for us to make veganism as easy as possible. You know, he talks about like, a lot of people think that the best thing to do is to increase the motivation to go vegan, and that might be talking about the health of the animals, environment, all that stuff, and making that more important for people, which obviously not saying that isn't important, but then he says in this article, this in itself is not sufficient to get a vegan world. I'm optimistic, and I do believe that most people in their hearts care about animals and don't want to see them harmed. The thing is, they just don't care enough to be willing to deal with too much inconvenience, or what they see as inconvenience. So in addition to increasing people's motivation, we also need to, you got it, we need to work on making the slope less steep. So the whole time he's been using this, like, this graph of, like, you know, how steep of a hill are people willing to go up? And so he says, making the slope less steep means that we are going to create an environment that offers as much vegan alternatives and in which the production of animal products become progressively harder, that people have to make less and less effort and thus need less and less motivation. The gentler the slope, the more vegan-friendly the environment, the more people will go vegan. Some people will only go vegan when there's no slope at all, and then some people at, like, the laggards, as he said, will only go vegan when the slope is, like, downhill, right? So do you feel like these things contradict each other? Or do you think, like, the inconvenience of reading a menu isn't, like, that great? Because, like, for me, I think a lot of people are worried about going out to eat with friends and taking a long time looking at the menu, trying to find something that they can eat and being unsure if something's vegan, and then having to ask questions of their server. It's like, okay, well, the ingredients they list are all vegan, but maybe they cook it in butter, or there's some hidden chicken stock, or, you know, there's, like, all these things that like, then make it look harder to go vegan.
It's interesting because I think there's, like, the good and the bad of this, because what he's saying is it's possibly an inconvenience for vegans, and if we're trying to get people to go vegan and we need it to be as most convenient as possible, then isn't this an inconvenience? Isn't that a bad thing? So in that sense, it's like, yeah, this might make veganism look harder, but I don't think necessarily maybe you can think about it like that's not the point that's trying to be made by this option 4. I feel like maybe the point that's trying to be made is, like, someone orders this item because it looks good to them. And then they look down at the key and they're like, oh, look, that's vegan. And then in their head, it's like, oh, that in their head, that kind of pushes them a little bit towards, like, okay, I can have good food that's still vegan. Like, I think that's the kind of good result that would happen from this option. And I think it's not, I don't think he's necessarily contradicting himself, because I don't think that this is so inconvenient that someone would say in like the same thought process would say, like, oh, this Moroccan couscous looks good. Like, I think I'm going to order that. Hey, what's this little asterisk? Let me look down. Oh, it's vegan. You know what? I'm still going to try and order it. But then think to themselves in the same thought, like, but you know what? That's really inconvenient that I had to look at and see if it's vegan. You know, I think to that person, they're still in the stage of, like, getting there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think they'd be thinking that far ahead. That'd be like, oh, I'm going to get this tasty food. But, like, if I had to eat this food all the time, that would be so annoying.
Well, it's like these two articles are discussing different stages of veganism. And, like, essentially, the point that Tobias thinks is, like, the most effective is the fifth one that we're about to discuss, which is, like, it's just on the menu and there's no marking that it's vegan, because non-vegans will accidentally order this, or, like, order it unknowing that it's vegan. And, you know, and so it's like, one is, like, don't we just want to get the most non-vegan food into people's mouths as possible? And the other is, like, we got to make veganism easy. So it's almost like if a tree falls in the forest thing. Like, if someone eats a vegan meal and they don't know that it's vegan, like, obviously it's good for the whole supply and demand aspect. But if they don't realize that they've eaten a vegan meal, it's like you need fucking T. Colin Campbell to appear with a smoke bomb after they've eaten the meal and be like, hey, that was vegan, then rides off in his bicycle, like, you know, to get the best of both worlds. That's something I always talk about with, like, Cinnaholic, which is an all-vegan cinnamon bun, like, gourmet cinnamon bun place, and they have zero signage saying that anything's vegan. And I just wish at the bottom of the takeaway box it was like, by the way, that was vegan, you know? So people gotcha. Ate it, and they're like, oh, it's delicious. And then they're like, oh, what? Vegan? God, fooled again! Yeah. It wasn't for you meddling kids.
It has the Dave Chappelle, Rick James, like, gotcha! No, yeah, you're right. And so you had already kind of alluded this, that in the article is kind of pushing for this option five, which is just, like, don't separate the vegan from the non-vegan items at all. And the article seems to be pushing this one because that is going to cause the most people to purchase this item. And like you said, Andy, it's like increasing the supply and demand. But unless the person knows that... well, and Tobias does say this. He says, but one could argue that if they don't know a dish was vegan at all, it might be a missed opportunity. So it's like, I think that this option five, yes, it could be... It could, if every restaurant adopted this, it could have an effect in reducing the amount of, say, like meat that people ate. Maybe it could, but I don't think it's going to be enough to like get most of those people to go vegan unless they realize that it was vegan afterwards.
Yeah.
And I wanted to comment on a point that you made before. You said, well, if someone does go vegan, then is this going to be like really, really hard for them? But with the kind of like vegan and vegetarian restaurants popping up, it's like those people, obviously this is only true for certain areas, and we're fortunate enough to be near or in areas where there are straight vegan restaurants. But for someone new that does go vegan, it's like they will have these vegan restaurants where it's like, oh, okay, I'm a new vegan. I'm still kind of figuring out how to read labels and stuff. I can just go to this restaurant and know that I can get anything they want. And that's okay for like a, you know, like, I mean, I think that's okay for anybody, but it's like, that's kind of like the safe haven for the new vegan to know. It's like, oh, okay, this is where I can go.
But then isn't that bad because then people aren't going to the restaurant, the non-vegan restaurant, and purchasing the vegan dishes and showing them that there's a market for it, and then they don't sell, you know, a bunch of these Moroccan couscous dishes and then they take it off the menu because no one's buying it?
But if it's this option four or option five, hopefully non-vegans are still purchasing this.
I guess.
I mean, that's...
that is the theory.
That's the theory. No... research backing my opinion, my opinions or statements.
So
that should be on our shirt. The Bearded Vegans and an asterisk on the back. It says absolutely zero research.
We Googled this for 5 minutes before talking about it. So I guess that kind of leads me to ask you, Paul, which option would you prefer? If you become the vegan czar that's dictating how menus are presented to people, what do you think is the best possible scenario in this of these five options? Or is there a sixth option?
I don't know what the sixth option. I couldn't think of any other options. But
just die.
The entire world just goes vegan. That's option six, and that's the one I choose. But I think I would choose option four, which is there is like a little asterisk. There's a little V with a little leaf on it attached to it next to the vegan menu items. As long as they actually are vegan, because sometimes I feel like things are labeled, especially in like an omnivore restaurant, things are labeled as vegan and they're not vegan, and like
a nice fish dish.
Yeah, so it's like that's not good. But if we're assuming that they are accurately labeled, I like that one because I think it's prominent enough that you could find it, but it's not so prominent that it's like, this is only for vegans.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, spoiler alert, I agree with you, Paul. I like, one, it's almost like two separate things. Like, it almost feels like the separate vegan restaurant is not a part of this equation.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he would argue that there's no place for all vegan restaurants in the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, the point is taken. And maybe he just included it because he knew people would jump in the comments and be like, well, what about a vegan restaurant? You know? So, and point well taken there. You know, comments and how they go. But, you know, it feels like really this is only a discussion that matters in so much as like dealing with non-vegan restaurants. And I agree. I think an unobtrusive symbol, just a green V or whatever it is, or even the asterisk, something that, you know, like Tobias makes a point, like vegans are used to reading menus and being inconvenienced, but I prefer to look for a menu that has a key that tells me what is vegan or not, mm-hmm. or vegetarian or like vegan option available type thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know to look for that. That's not that inconvenient. It's like a little bit of a treasure hunt sometimes, and that's fun. It's fun. And so something that like, if I, from my pre-vegan days, I shudder to think of such a time, Paul, but you know, from my pre-vegan days, I don't ever remember looking at menus for those things. You know, yeah. And so I feel like it's just something that like the average meat eater, or average non-vegan at least, I feel like it's something the average non-vegan isn't looking for. So you still have that option of they could accidentally buy the vegan dish just because it looks good, but it makes it a lot easier for vegans. I know for me personally, you know, obviously I have Happy Cow, so that kind of, and Yelp and stuff, those things, but especially Happy Cow, bring me to restaurants as I travel. But if I'm just like walking down a downtown area and I see like an Indian restaurant or something or a Thai restaurant, I'm like, oh, let me just look at their menu. Let me look at the sushi, you know, restaurant's menu and look for like the vegetable section, vegetarian section, or look for this thing. And if I don't see it right away, I'm moving on. You know, yeah. I'm not
taking no time for that.
Yeah, ain't nobody got time for that shit. I'm not spending time to read every ingredient and every little thing. Maybe I'll look at like the names of a few dishes, but like in general, I got places to be. I got food to eat. I'm not spending time on what appears to be like a not vegan friendly menu. Yeah. So I feel like it's like a bad idea for restaurants to not do that. And I think that having the key can also still subtly reinforce the idea that, hey, there's vegan food at this restaurant that you like.
I mean, if people like you, if the vegans might walk by it, if they don't know if there's vegan options, I don't think that's going to break the restaurant, you know? They're losing possibly 2% of their clientele.
But I think playing, like, yeah, it's probably a very small percentage of sales that they're missing out on. But isn't it better that those restaurants get those sales? I guess my point is, it makes it seem like there's less options for new vegans if they're walking by menus and they're looking at things like, oh, there's nothing for me here, there's nothing for me here, or I'm just going to have to put together some like vegetable sides and try and cobble together some like sad wilted romaine salad or something. You know, like I feel like that plays to making it harder to be vegan.
I'll also say this, because I'm sure people are yelling at their audio players right now. They're Walkmans. Like, this is, I just want to acknowledge that this is like one small part in like the whole thing of like becoming vegan, advocating for veganism, all that stuff. Like, this is just, I feel like this is one small element of it. Not unimportant, but this alone, I don't think is going to be the thing that makes someone or doesn't make someone go vegan. I'll take that back. It could be the thing that makes someone go vegan if they try like the Impossible Burger or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Paul, this is the minutia that we deal in. You know, we're 85 episodes in. We're going to dig into the nitty gritty of these details.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of what we discuss is, this is certainly a much more lighthearted episode than some of our ones in the past. And I feel like it's probably like a lot more like some of our original episodes, like Is Birthday Cake Vegan and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's fun to pick them apart.
It is. No, but I don't think anyone listening should, you know, not go to certain restaurants because they have certain labelings of their menu items.
So then, have you given any thought, Paul, to my question at the beginning of this? Who's this article for?
I think,
is it like just a thought experiment article that's interesting to write about and doesn't really serve any real purpose? Is it, I guess I have a theory, but I want to hear what you have to say.
I think it's just a thought experiment, because I don't think it's like, hey, all you vegan restaurant owners out there. I mean, that's going to reach like,
shut down your vegan restaurant.
So I think it's just a thought experiment.
I think it's to tell vegans to sit down and shut up, because people complain about things like when we saw the Beyond Burger was introduced and originally it was only found in like the meat section.
Yeah.
Now I've found it in like the vegan and, you know, frozen sections and stuff.
I've actually never seen it in the meat section, which I'm a little peeved about, Andy.
A little PO'd. And people complained about that. And it was like, do you not see the strategic purpose of putting this vegan burger with the meat section? Like, this isn't for you. This isn't about you. This is for non-vegans. It like reminds me of that. So maybe it's this article just serves as like a reminder to be like, yeah, it's more convenient for you to have a separate vegan section or separate vegan menu, but like, let's think about the bigger picture here.
Yeah.
That's my assumption.
I can see that. I think that's actually a pretty, I think that's pretty cool. Just to be like, hey, you know, take it, calm down.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I have to say, over the, you know, 85 or so episodes that we've done, I've grown to feel less and less connected to a lot of the theory that Tobias puts out in the world. But I guess I don't agree with this either, because he wants option 5 and I want option 4. But I do think it's like an important thing, or it's like an interesting thing to think about. It's something that helps us keep perspective on like what is the end game.
Yeah,
but ultimately, I feel like hidden vegan options, I don't know. I feel like the amount of non-vegans that are accidentally buying these vegan dishes doesn't necessarily counteract the damage done by making it inconvenient for people to be vegan.
I do think that option 5 maybe goes along with a little more like the reducitarian type philosophy, where it's like what we're trying to do with this is just reduce the number of meat that the amount, the number of meat, the number of meat.
Smart Paul.
It's such that we're just trying to reduce the amount of meat in total that people are eating. It doesn't matter how close we are to getting to veganism. We're just reducing the number of meat.
That's why it was rubbing me the wrong way. Option 5.
To his credit though, he does say in option 5, he says, but you are potentially missing them even realizing that it's vegan, and that's a missed opportunity. So he acknowledges it.
All right. But yeah, you're right. It's basically saying it doesn't matter if people go vegan. It just matters if less meat is consumed, you know. But I feel like it is important that people move towards veganism, realize they're eating a vegan dish, even if subtly. Or I think the option 4, the little asterisk, is the best of both worlds there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, so like what I was trying to say before, how this is kind of like, this isn't the only thing that's going to make or break someone being vegan. It's like, if you know, you know, like if you're going out to eat with people and stuff like that, it's like you can also be the person that's encouraging them to get these items. And even if it's a separate vegan menu and you have that menu, you can be like, oh, hey, doesn't this thing look good? You know? Yeah. So it's like, this is not in its own little bubble where it's like, this is the, like, you know.
What are you trying to say, Paul?
I don't know. Who knows? I don't know.
There we go. I love it. Well, so you're standing firm on option 4.
Yeah.
Asterisk. I'm with that.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely don't like option 2.
Yeah.
That separate menu?
No. Horrible.
Like yeah.
Anything else to say about
it? Well, I'm thinking about at Veggie Galaxy, they say like every time I've been there, they say, do you want the separate gluten-free menu or something like that?
And you say, God, no. You take one and throw it in the trash?
Every single time.
Ron Swanson style, you take one, throw it in the trash, like another. Throw it in the trash, yes.
But that's different, I think, because even if the option is being offered, most people, non-vegans, probably would just say no.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Pass.
Just like I don't have to eat gluten-free, fortunately. Yeah. So it's like
But gluten is not an ethical issue.
It is not. Yeah, that's why.
Unless it's important to take care of yourself and you have gluten intolerance, then.
Well, yeah.
You're ethically obligated to not eat gluten, I guess.
That would...
A la Francium.
Ooh, that sounds like a tasty dish.
It's different than a la mode. What's a la Francium?
I don't know. I'm a thick plate of spaghetti noodles. Just, I don't know.
I feel like it's like you're served like, instead of a scoop of ice cream, this is like a withered peach on top of your dish.
What? A withered peach? Are we done here?
We're done here.
So yeah, let us know what you think about this whole thing. You can always send us an email at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. You can hit us up on the Facebook or the Instagram, which is just thebeardedvegans. And let us know. Send us in your comments. Let us know if there's anything that you want us to hear us talking about. Andy, what do you got coming up?
This coming weekend, I got another doubleheader.
Oh, boy.
June 24th, I'll be at the Richmond Veg Fest in Richmond, Virginia. June 25th, I'll be at the Vegan Pop-Up in Morristown, New Jersey, along with Screamer's Pizza.
Ooh.
I think Yeah Dog's going to be there, too. That should be fun. July 5th through the 9th, I'll be camping out at Vegetarian Summerfest in Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Are you actually camping?
No. Oh. I'll be sleeping in my van. But it's like a five-day event, so...
What?
And...
Where is this?
Johnstown, Pennsylvania. It's like a western Pennsylvania. Maybe I'll sneak over to Apteca, get some pierogies.
Oh, and then bring me some, because when is this? I'll maybe be in Philadelphia by then.
July 5th through the 9th?
Nope.
Okay. We've gone off track. July 22nd, I'll be at Compassion Fest in Hamden, Connecticut, and yay, so will Like No Udder.
Yes.
Very excited about that.
I have not had them in so long.
July 23rd, I'll be at a vegan pop-up in Asbury Park, New Jersey, along with the Almighty Vegan Treats is going to be there.
Ooh.
And you know what? That's all I'm going to say for now. That's everything up through July. I just confirmed a bunch more events in August, September, October, and November from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Dallas, Texas, Tampa, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia. So head over to CompassionCo.com. It's CompassionCo.com to get all the dates, deets, and links, all those DDLs on these sweet, sweet events. And then you can come to any of them and find me behind the Compassion Company table.
Yeah.
And I will have Beard Vegan's buttons and stickers while supplies last for free.
And they're pretty nice buttons and stickers. I had a lot of people at the New York event like look around the table when they were looking through the buttons and look around the table and be like, hey, what are those buttons over there?
Secret buttons. People want what they can't have, Paul. Paul, this is a fun one. This is like a nice lighthearted romp through the good old days. Paul's just knocking over microphones left and right. This had me thinking.
Yes.
You know, if I looked at a menu, if someone out there, if some vegan restaurateur out there decides to create a dish and name it the Bearded Vegans, I would love, my preferred option of all five options would be to have a little asterisk. And then when people search through and they act like Nicolas Cage, they're looking for the key, and then they finally find it and they blow the dust off of it and they read it. And it says the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
Not the bees.
In the darkest night, I make the bad guys fall. There's a million heroes, but I'm the best of them all. Yeah. Who has the coolest gadgets? Who has the tricked out ride? Who does the sickest backflips?
Does Peaceful Kingdom have what's the woman that's in a lot of the documentaries that we've watched?
She's that it's like that one's been around for a while, and just went vegan like the last 2 years.
All right,
Renee King Sonnen
singing to pigs.
Herman. So that was just, what are you looking at me like that for?
I missed you.
I got a good transition. So I think that was just like a nice positive story to throw in the mix, cheer everyone's day up, brighten up your day, so to speak.
Yeah.
Paul,
yes,
Speaking.
Andy. Is that that Mark Wahlberg movie, The Speaking? All right. So and he's going to cough directly.
I'm going to die.
Are you okay?
Yep.
You eating that gluten?
That gluten cough. Mr. Wild will now be running a vegan organic market, farm supplying, garden. I feel like I phrased that so weird.
There's so many adjectives to that sentence. Don't die.
Mr. Wild will now be running a vegan organic market farm supplying garden produce without using animal products. I got so close. Okay. Mr. Wild will now be running a vegan organic market farm. God.
Take three. Four. God. Take five.
Okay. Mr. Wild. Okay. Okay.
I'm not going to look at you.
Yeah. I was looking at you anyway, Paul. Mr. Wild will...
God damn it.
Do you want me to read this one?
I can't do it.
Do you want me to read
it? No, I got it. Okay. Mr. Wild will now... Did your phone just go off?
That was yours!
God damn it. Okay. Okay. All right. Mr. Wild will now be running a vegan organic market farm supplying garden produce without using animal products or fertilizers.
Ha 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 ha